Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, going to go out a little off the reservation because we're going to talk about quilting and embroidery and all those things. So she's a fiber artist, a quilter, a lecturer, a teacher. It's Diane L. Murtha. Diane, welcome.
Thank you, Gary. And Beth, it's good to be with you today.
Okay. It's two against one here because I know zip about quilting, so this will be fun. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
But I do know now when we were doing the research, my grandma used to make quilts, a lot of them. And that was back in the day when you took the old shirts and repurposed all the fabric and things. And you said you learned from your grandma with the hand sewn and then hand tied. And I remember my grandma hand tying those quilts. And that's old school. Yeah.
It is, and it was a good way to learn. Actually, the first class I took back in the late 80s, early 90s, she kind of taught similarly. But my grandmother made me, I was hand stitching the pieces together, and my stitches were too big, and she made me tear them out and redo them. I was terribly embarrassed that my stitches were not good enough for my grandmother. But it was a really good lesson to learn about why stitches need to be small, so that the quality of the quality of the stitches is important, so that the quilt lasts. And I still have this quilt, the very first doll quilt I did.
Oh my, that's neat. Yeah, we still have one of my grandma's quilts. It's in kind of ragged shape, but hanging on to it. Yeah, yep, cool stuff. So what was the tying? Was it to keep the quilting from moving around because you didn't do?
Right. Instead of machine quilting it. So you have your three layers, your back, your batting, cotton batting, and then the top quilt. And you either tie them so you're sandwiching and holding those three pieces together, or you hold them together by quilting them with either hand stitches or machine stitches. So in this particular case, my grandmother, had the good sense not to try to have a 7-year-old hand stitching all of those. She says, we're just going to tie this one. So, and by securing the three layers together, that helps ensure the quality of the quilt and, its longevity.
Okay.
The wear factor.
I'm learning. I'm making notes. So how many have you made quilts, Beth? You've made quilts, right?
Yeah, but only a handful. Only a handful of quilts. And I've had, I think I hand quilted one. That was a crazy endeavor. And all the rest I've sent out to be machine quilted by somebody else, because that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
To have someone who's an expert to it. But so, Diane, did you keep with quilting after your grandma taught you?
Well, kind of.
Kind of.
So I just wrote a book. We'll talk about that later. But I'm a maker. I have been making things my entire life. Little doll clothes, basket weaving pot holders. All kinds of things. I did a few things on my own, and then, girls get busy with all kinds of things, including sports. I took a couple singer sewing classes that my mom insisted we take, and then it wasn't until, sometime in high school, I thought, if I can sew, I can make a bigger quilt, and I just kind of didn't follow any instructions, and it was kind of a disaster. So then I thought, okay, sewing is different than quilting, and I need to take some lessons and learn how to do that properly. So that's kind of what I did. And so then it wasn't until the 80s that I decided to really start quilting again. And of all of the things that I did, weaving baskets and painting and woodworking, all of those things, I guess I was more drawn to the quilting because it was something that my grandmother had done. And it was a mobile kind of project for the most part. I worked for 32 years for the Department of the Army as a civilian, and I traveled a lot. And I thought, okay, you know, I can't get in trouble if I'm in my hotel room at night, hand quilting, you know. So I was more drawn to that. So then I realized with the hand quilting, there were so many projects out there, so many beautiful things that I wanted to do, that I would probably only get a couple of hand quilted quilts done in my lifetime, that I'm like, okay, I've got to switch to machine quilting, because, you know, it was just, you know, a kid in a candy store. There was just so many wonderful things that I wanted to do.
What drew you into quilts more than like painting, or sketching?
So one, the mobility of the project, but I think it was because it was something that my grandmother taught us to embroidery, to cross stitch, knit, crochet. But for some reason, I remember the quilts. And Gary, you mentioned, you know, quilts from your family. They were utility quilts. Every time we went fishing with my grandmother, my grandpa would pull an old quilt out of the trunk of the car. We would lay it on, you know, on the grass next to the pond.
Yep.
You know, we would, if it was too hot in the house, they didn't have air conditioning in southern Iowa, we would take a quilt, throw it out under the shade tree, and we'd all sit out there. So those are really fond memories of, you know, my grandmother, those quilts. I can, you know, see her at the trundle pedal machine and her pile of sewing things. So those were the things that kind of really warmed my heart about quilts. The other was the whole, it's really a women's art from, you know, so many years ago. And they were doing it just, you know, for warmth and bedding. But they still were able to make beautiful things with very little fabric choices or tools. So they used a lot of creativity with the limited things they had, you know, leftover fabric from dresses or old shirts, like you mentioned, Gary, you know, scraps left over from, I remember my grandmother, it was scraps left over from curtains. And they still were able to make some beautiful things. So my philosophy had been for a long time now to primarily use what I have and to always quilt it myself like my grandmother did.
It's so cool about those, because now, I mean, I made one quilt in my life, and that was eighth grade home ec with Miss Sakamoto, you know, because we had to learn how to use a sewing machine. And so I thought I'd lost it. But when we moved here a couple of years ago, I learned I had not lost it. And, you know, it's just like a doll, like you said, a doll quilt. But, you know, in the fabrics that I used, I remember those from some of my shirts. And, you know, I'm hanging on to that sucker because it's, I mean, there isn't one corner that meets anything. But, but it, you know, it's, yeah, it has memories. And yeah, I remember that too with my grandma. Yeah, there was always a quilt somewhere for something. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember my mom, my grandmother made quilts, but she made them out of polyester. In fact, I just a few years ago ran across some that were not quilted, and I had to have someone professionally quilt them. But she made them to be durable, so she got that polyester in it, and those are never going to run out, wear out, because yes. They're just, you know, forever.
Right, and they used what they had. My grandmother mixed polyesters and cottons all the time in her utility quilts. That was okay, you know. Then you can talk to some people and they'd be aghast. Oh my God, you didn't use all cotton, you know, for shame.
Right. But they work and they're beautiful and they remind me of her, and you know, they're nice to have.
Yes.
In their own way.
In the quilt world, do we have people who, are there two schools, people who use machines and people who hand sew? Is that kind of a thing?
Definitely. Okay. So first of all, I'll give you a little lesson there too, Gary. So my husband came home one day and was all excited. He said, "Do you know the three different ways to quilt?" And I said, "Well, you know, I think I do, but you know, you tell me what you think it is." He was so excited. He said, "You can hand quilt, you can machine quilt, or you can quilt by check, paying a long armor to."
Okay.
So he was very proud of himself that he knew that was another way to make a quilt. But yes, there's definitely still in all of the quilt shows, they still have a category for hand quilted quilts, and they're kind of limited in the numbers, but they are beautiful and they're usually full size. And then they have the separate category. They have a category for a domestic quilted machine as well as a long arm quilted machine or quilts.
Yeah. Okay. Just trying to get the lay of the land. Because we went to Paducah to the quilt museum here just a few months ago. And it was for a speaker, a person who was a guest on our show. And she did a talk there and had some time to go through that museum. And I mean, that really opened my eyes. I never realized what people did when they made quilts. I mean, just amazing stuff and art quilts. And of course, you got the, you know, the story of the Underground Railroad and how the quilt patterns were used as symbols. And
yes,
there's tremendous history. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the quilts there at Paducah are beautiful. I know my husband's not a quilter, and he was fascinated by the way they were made. He was getting, you know, he's an engineer, so he was looking real close to see, well, how did they do that? How did they do that? He was the engineering part, you know, how is that made? It made him very curious. And the art quilts that are made now are just fantastic.
Well, and the museum does a wonderful job. I've had two different quilts on display there, three now. And they have a wonderful selection of exhibits that come through there. On our way from Florida, from Iowa down to Florida, we stopped in November, and they had the swing coats there. They had, I'm trying to think, oh, somebody did like one of the Christmas stories. And everybody took a stanza of the song, I guess, and they did a separate quilt just on that part of the song. That was just really very interesting and creative, I thought, as well.
Yeah, that swing coat exhibit, that was there when I was there. Holy smokes, that was just... Well, that was just amazing on so many fronts, but
yes,
yeah,
very, very cool, very interesting, a very nice way to utilize those coats and the way they were displayed. You know, they were, you know, kind of hanging free form and kind of half open, so you could see the front and the backs. And I just thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, so much meaning there. What moved you from conventional quilts, whatever that might be, to art quilts? Is it just a desire for creativity?
Well, that's a good question. And I laugh because, you know, my mom would say, you know, one, I question and challenge everything. She used to hate to helping me do my math homework because I would challenge her. Why is 2 + 2 = 4? Why is it 4? You know? Well, you know, now, you know, in math terms, it could be something in between. But yeah, anyway, yeah. I have a hard time following directions. I'm a law-abiding citizen, but I always look at, well, why do you have to do it this way? What would happen if you did it a different way? And I liked traditional quilts and did traditional patterns for a long time. I usually would still modify them or do something different. But I did every challenge that my quilt guild offered. But then I did, and usually those were fairly, I don't know, they weren't super challenging. But I did an invitational challenge sponsored by a store. And what I realized was I didn't have to find the perfect pattern. I could design it and draft it myself. I didn't have to look for and search for the perfect fabric. I could hand dye it. I could paint on it. I could draw on it. And it just kind of opened up all these windows. Then I thought, when you look at it kind of backwards, you're like, you know, I could have done those things on the standard patterns as well, but it just didn't seem like it was allowed. You know, the quilt police would say, no, this is the pattern. You follow the pattern. You know, if it's supposed to be a log cabin, it has to look like a log cabin. If it's a four patch, it's supposed to look like a four patch. So, you know, it didn't seem like it was allowed to deviate until I found out about these art quilts and thought, oh my gosh, you know, I can do whatever I want. It's okay to mix polyester with cotton. It's okay to mix upholstery fabric with cotton and wool. So it was a fun, eye-opening experience.
That's the quilt police, because I used to work for a small company, and the owner's wife owned a very large quilt shop, very large and I think very successful. But it was a couple of times I encountered her and then encountered her shop. To me, it was just so intimidating. You know, the points got to match up and everything's got to be thus and such and so on and so forth. And it was like, I don't need that. That it just kind of turned me off. But so you know, it was literally quilt police. You know, I felt like, oh, I could never match up to that. But
if you want to be a blue ribbon quilter, those are the things you strive for. a couple thoughts on that line is, I've told people before, I will never win a blue ribbon. Because the people that I know who win ribbons, they master a topic. They master wool applique or English paper piecing. And that's predominantly what they do. They really become a master at that. I'm a jack of all trades. I jump from one thing to another. Ooh, that looks interesting. Let's try that. So I never get to be very skilled at that any particular thing, but I am willing to try. I'm willing to make mistakes, and I'm willing to keep trying. Now, my husband, you know, God love him, and I'm so appreciative that he pays attention to my quilting and supports my quilting. But one night I was hand sewing the binding, and he asked, you know, he was looking at it, the quilt a little bit. So I thought, okay, I'll educate him a little bit about how, you know, the points are supposed to match and, you know, the angles and a few other things. And so then he started looking at the quilt and he goes, ooh, that corner doesn't match. Ooh, that one doesn't match either. Oh my gosh. You know? And so then I politely said, my dear, that's like pointing out somebody's mistakes. And he goes, oh, I'm so sorry. Then he waited a minute. Then he waited a little bit.
I'm impressed you were polite. Smack upside the head. Please leave.
And then he said, wow, you make a lot of mistakes. But, you know, you can strive for perfection, or you can just learn whatever you're choosing to learn from that project and move on to the next one. So I don't worry about those things as well. And again, I don't worry about winning a blue ribbon. I do what I do because I enjoy it and I like it. So the art quilts kind of give you some of that creativity. Modern quilting also has opened up a little bit of that, those parameters a little bit, allowing you to, you know, not worry so much about points matching and things and circles not being all, you know, the same size and all that. It's kind of fun.
I think the quilt police sometimes just take the fun out of, well, and same with the needlework police, you know, they're like, everything must be exactly perfect. I'm like, well where's the fun in that? You know, let's play with this a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. There's one teacher that I've taken some classes from, and you know, she talks about organic shapes in nature. Not every leaf is uniform. You know, every snowflake is individual. So it's okay if, you know, as you're hand stitching or machine quilting, that not every leaf is exactly the same. Not every circle is exactly the same. And the good thing is, if you keep, you know, keep everything a little wonky, it looks intentional. And as long as it looks intentional, it's okay. If you have 100 right. perfect circles and one that's not, then everybody's going to say, you know.
Yeah, right.
So I like to go for that organic look then.
Yeah.
Right.
I was intrigued. You mentioned Heidelberg, Germany Quilt Guild. What is quilting like on the other side of the world?
Oh, well, fun.
Wait a minute. I just said Germany, and I'm looking for – never mind. Their points all match, I'm sure.
Well, yes, kind of. Yes, that is true. So they follow rules, so their points and stuff match. But the fun thing is they're not afraid to use color. German women will dye their hair, you know, blue and purple and, you know, all kinds of different things. And so that was very kind of eye opening. I belonged to two different groups when I was in Heidelberg. One was a small kind of a B group, or a small women's, you know, at home kind of group. And it was Americans and German group. And that was very fun. But they were very skilled, and they take their points and everything pretty seriously. And then I also belonged to the all German group, but that was challenging because they all spoke in German.
Right.
So, you know, you learn a lot of the language, but it's hard to translate the technical stuff. So I didn't go to as many of those guild meetings because it was too hard for my friends to help translate everything that was going on. Now, the Christmas program was really fun, and I could sing, you know, O Tannenbaum and all of those things, but that was too hard for them to translate. Same with their quilt shows, too. You know, they call it patchwork. So it's patchwork and fiber arts. And I remember expecting to see, you know, very traditional quilts at this show. And they had pretty traditional quilting. And then more the fiber arts, a very wide array of art. And I thought, wait, these aren't quilts. But I don't know if they were ahead of art quilts, or it was my first introduction to them, and I didn't appreciate them until, you know, a few years later.
So do they have the same sort of quilting materials, like the fabrics? Are they different?
Yeah. No, their fabrics are all the same. They usually sell them by the, you know, by the meter instead of the yard. And actually, I just did an article last summer for American Quilter magazine. It was called The International Language of Quilters. We had taken a Viking river cruise, and we visited five different countries. And so my goal was to find a fabric store in each of the countries and talk to the quilters and stitchers. And they combined their knitting and crocheting stores are all part of the fabric stores. And the knitting and crocheting is very, very popular with the 20 and 30 year olds. But anyway, yes, that was the fabric is the same. It is more expensive. I remember one of the gals in my German American small group, her husband traveled for his job, and he would go to North Carolina probably four or five times a year. He would always go into the same little fabric store, buy his wife a yard of fabric, and it was some, you know, some pretty paper or the packaging or whatever, and he would bring it back to her, and they got ready to move, and she had quite a stash of fabric, and they got ready to move from one house in Germany to another one, and they had to do like an insurance assessment of you know, the value of things, and so she told him what the value was of the stash in her in her room, and he was just so surprised. And she says, "How can you be surprised? You buy me a yard of fabric from the States, you know, four times a year. You know what you pay there. You see how much I have here." And she just said, he's like, you spent all that money on that fabric? And her response was, no, I stole it. What do you think? Of course I bought it. And then she says, well, maybe I kind of, you know, shot myself in the foot, because now he knows how much I'm spending by how many piles of fabric I have here. But so if they have an opportunity to get fabric online or fabric other places, they tend to, at that time, tended to do that because it was a little bit more pricey for their sewing materials.
I just didn't know if it was like different, because I know, like, I think in Japan they have slightly, it's not that the fabric is different, it's just like a different patterns or things that are more popular there than here. A difference there. So
yeah, now when I did my background research for that article, I was also surprised that a lot of the Europeans are buying the fabrics to make clothes, especially the younger people. They're buying, making clothes for their babies, making, you know, sheet sets and curtains and clothing. So the particular places I was at, they said the quilting was not as popular as some of the other things. And the one shop, I remember a gal walked in and, you know, she was probably in her 30s, but she had knitted her skirt that she was wearing and knitted the vest that she was wearing. And so she came in, you know, kind of showing off her knitwear. And I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, that was just amazing. So I thought that was very interesting about the differences in how, you know, in the United States, a lot of times our fiber, we have fabric in one store and we have the yarn and a different store and, right, you know, the beads and you know, in another store, but they have it kind of all combined.
Just dump it together, sort it out.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So talk about your quilting before early retirement, and then what happened afterwards. Does that was the look out, here I come kind of thing?
Yeah, well, kind of. So, you know, I'd always been quilting, but I was working a you know, 12 to 14 hour job. So I quilted on the weekends, or, you know, just fast enough to get a project done for, you know, a holiday or a birthday or some special event. Taking classes, going to retreats, but just didn't have a whole lot of time. I would have these great ideas and I would, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to change the border, I'm going to do something else. And then I realized I'm running out of time. I've had this project going for, you know, months and months and months. And one, I'm getting bored with it. And two, I just want to get it done so I can move on. So I was stifling my own creativity because of the amount of time I had or didn't have for it. So I took the early retirement and I started to kind of spend a little bit more time in the studio. And all, I guess just ahead of that, I had started doing the art quilts and doing the challenges. And so a challenge is sponsored by either an individual, a fabric company, a museum or a store. Some, you know, it could also be by thread companies or ruler companies, but a challenge sets some parameters and you have to quilt within your project has to stay within that. So it might be the colors of fabric or the actual fabrics. They will tell you have to buy these fabrics and incorporate them into your project. It has to be a specific size or it has to match a certain theme. So I started, you know, doing these challenges and they were just very fun and very creative and I just could, you know, design them myself and I was having a lot of fun. And one of my friends, Donna DeSoto in Northern Virginia, she had offered a challenge and it was for the 100 year anniversary of national parks. I picked a subject, she approved it. And I started working on it, and then three foster children arrived. We were expecting one.
Oh no!
So three was a lot more, And anybody who's had small children in their house knows how much time is left for quilting end of the day, which is a big fat zero. So I had to drop out, and Donna was very gracious. She said, well, what if I extend the deadline for you? And I said, I have no idea when my house will ever be back to normal or when I might ever get back to quilting. So I dropped out. Well, her book was just super stunning. The National Parks, inspired by national parks. And about 24 of my Northern Virginia friends had their quilts accepted into the book. And I had thought, I always had a bucket list goal of writing a book. And at the time I thought, I wonder if, had I been able to finish that quilt, would my quilt been good enough to make it into the book? So there's usually like two layers. Your quilt may be accepted into the exhibit, which could travel for up to 2 years. And sometimes they have a book along with it and sometimes not. But if they have a book, there's a second jurying process by the publisher. So I thought, I wonder if my quilt would have been good enough to make it into the book. So then I had a goal of, okay, I would really like to have one of my quilts accepted into an exhibit and also into a book. And I'm like, well, hoo-hoo, that would cross that list, that bucket list goal off. Okay, I instead of writing a whole book, I'll just get a quilt included in a book. So that was one goal that I had. And so then I started seeking challenges so that I could participate in them. But I will also say that I choose my challenges carefully. I want to have a purpose for that quilt when it's done. A couple things. I want to learn something. So I'm either inspired by the topic or the colors. Something has inspired me that's like, wow, I've got an idea and I know what I want to do and I'm going to try a different technique. The second is I want to have a purpose for that quilt. Either I know where I'm going to hang it in my house, I know who I'm going to give it to or donate it to. I had one friend in Northern Virginia who did a lot of these challenges, and she had a pile of probably 24 quilts just sitting there. And she's like, oh, those I did for, you know, some event, and I don't even like them. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I am not going to spend my time working on something that I'm not going to enjoy or, you know, have a purpose to give to. I mean, I did one as a kind of a memorial in memory of my dad, and I gifted that to my sister. I've done several of my pets. One was a birthday present to my husband. Another challenge that I did for Cherrywood Fabric. My inspiration was a drawing of my 7-year-old nephew who had done. And so he was he's just so excited that I'm showing his artwork to people all around the country. But anyway, he gets that quilt when I'm done traveling with it. So I try to have some purpose to the quilts, and I always want to learn something from them. And now that I'm lecturing and I have a couple lectures on challenges, I like to keep my lectures fresh by inserting new challenge quilts in there. But the challenges just were very fun and let me do many different things. And I just really liked that.
Okay. So that connects you with your creativity then. That lets you express yourself and go rather than buying a pattern and just executing it.
Yes. Well, yes. And my husband and I were talking as we were driving here and as far as me, you know, not really wanting to follow the rules, but he said, nobody can tell you what to do. I'm like, try to tell me to do this and I'm going to do the opposite. You know, I'll ask him for his advice and he'll say, I think orange would be a good color here. And I'll say, okay, thanks. I'm going to use blue. but yes, that's kind of where my art quilting things have gone. And I'll tell you too, I do not have an art degree or a design degree. So I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants in some of these cases. I remember I wanted to do a botanical quilt with like the shadow of the petals, you know, and a somebody who has a design degree would know how they could change the fabrics to lighten it so that it's layered just in the right place under the petals so that you have the darker fabric. So it has, you know, you have the appearance of a light source. And I did not know how to do that. You know, it was making my head hurt trying to figure out how to do that. So instead I created my own three-dimensional technique with floral wire. And I have used that in several quilts for the flower petals. I've used it for butterfly wings. Like a poinsettia, a Christmas poinsettia kind of thing. And then I did I thought it was kind of really cool. It was a wintry autumn. It was called it was a challenge with black and white plus one color. The color that was selected for me was orange, and so it's called tangerine sky, and the black background is white with like a little orange burst, and then this black tree, so like a wintry tree with no leaves on it. And I use the three-dimensional technique, so you know, it either looks wintry or Halloweeny, you know, with the branches coming off the side of the quilt. So I developed that technique just so I could achieve what I wanted, because I didn't know how to do it any other way. So I'm often creating or developing something new to make it work for me.
Well, that's what I enjoyed about so many of your quilts is, and this was just my own reading of it, was, all right, I finished a quilt. Now let me go over here and get some stuff and bring it to life and put some dimension to it and some shape. And because what you do beyond the base quilt is really fun, beads and all manner of things. That's it's like the quilt's only halfway done until you do that.
Right. Well, and Beth, I know, can appreciate this too. You know, you sometimes you look at a quilt and you think, well, it just is missing a little oomph or a wow factor. It needs something. Well, let's try some beads.
Right.
let's try some paint. Let's couch on some yarn. You know, what can we do here? You know, and sometimes it's planned intentionally ahead of time. And other times you get to the end and you're like, you know, I think I need to do something else. I really enjoy beading. I haven't done as much of it as I would like, but it is so relaxing. But I have found many opportunities to include beads in my projects. And I'm really enjoying that. And I talk in my lectures to other quilters about how to incorporate beading and embroidering and big stitching into their even traditional quilts. And one gal from the Mississippi Valley Quilters Guild, she was part of a group. They all did the same traditional quilt. She chose to do hers in a Halloween kind of fabric. She had taken a beading class for the first time ever. She decided to add a spider web to the bottom of her quilt, a beaded spider web. She said it took her 2 weeks to do it because she was new at this beading thing, and she won an award. And so here her quilt was being judged against 14 others that was exactly the same pattern. But what made hers stand out was this little spider web in the bottom corner. And people thought, oh, well, she can't use it as a lap blanket now because she's got beads on it. You're like, no, these are not like huge, hunky, you know, chunky beads. She can still use it. She can still wash it. It's going to be fine. So I encourage people to try to incorporate beads and, you know, embroidery and other things. And, you know, so, you know, some people go, oh, well, no, I just do traditional stuff. Well, it's okay. You can do traditional, but try adding some of these other things in. You could be very surprised how just a little bit can add a huge wow factor. And I've had fun doing that And some people don't see the beads or the sequins right away. And then they look a little harder and they're like, oh, isn't that so cute? You know, I just think it's fun and I enjoy it.
Don't you think that's part of the play factor, kind of, you know, getting out of that comfort zone, trying different techniques? How are you going to know you're going to like it or don't like it unless you try it? And and just take a little time to play with the materials.
Right. Gary, you had asked me earlier about how, you know, springboarding, you know, at when I retired, how things kind of, you know, the flood, you know, how the floodgates opened and what all happened. So I had more time to play because I had stifled my creativity earlier. But I'll have to tell you the story about how I offered to do my first lecture, though. We'd moved from Virginia to Iowa. And, you know, you have to fill out your membership form. And at the bottom, they very, you know, very carefully ask, do you have any special skills? Well, they're looking for volunteers, you know. So I wrote, if you're ever in a pinch for a speaker, I can tell you about my experiences doing these challenge quilts and what I've learned. Like, no kidding, it was 2 weeks later, I get a phone call, and Tim and I were driving somewhere in the RV, and the program manager calls and says, Diane, we would like to have you speak about your challenges right before we launch our new challenge for the year, and we're hoping then that you can inspire and encourage other people to participate in this challenge with us. And I said, oh, that would be wonderful. I'd be happy to do that for you. She says, I need two things. I need the title of your presentation and how much you're going to charge. And she said, call me back and let me know. Now I'm like, oh, okay, I hang up. Well, I had planned to do it for free as a member of the guild, just, you know, me giving back to my organization. Right, yeah. And I'm telling my husband this, and he's like, take the money, take the money. So then, you know, I start doing these lectures, and my brother said, people really pay you to talk? I said, yes. And he kind of like half under his breath says, I'd pay you to be quiet.
Did you kick him?
Well, then my husband says, I didn't know that was an option. And then he said, but I think that would cost me a lot more money. Yeah. So I was lined up to do this one for the local guild, and I thought, well, hey, they hardly know me. I moved from Virginia to Iowa. I've only been here about a year. If they're willing to pay me to speak to them, I bet, you know, my friends in Virginia, I mean, there was, you know, a dozen guilds that I was associated with. It was an umbrella group. I mean, in a big metropolitan area, we were one of an umbrella group of 12 guilds. I thought, wow, I should ask them. You know, they might want me to come out and speak to them. Well, they did. I went out to Virginia. I called it that my kickoff tour. I did four lectures in, I think, 10 days. And it kind of just exploded from there. I remember talking to a program chairperson from the Des Moines area, Quilters Guild, and she was excited about the lecture. And we actually met for lunch. It was in the middle of the winter, but she came from Des Moines, and I came from the Davenport area. We met somewhere in the middle and had lunch. And she says, well, we're a big guild. Well, we're going to want two lectures and two workshops. And I said, well, right now I'm just lecturing. I mean, I, you know, just a little bit above an average quilter. I consider myself a little bit above an average quilter. There's people that know far more than me. You know, I wasn't planning on teaching any workshops. And she patted my arm and she said, honey, you have a year to figure that out. Because she was booking me for the following January. So I'm like, oh, you know, I'm jumping into this.
Basically, your quilting career, you got dragged into then.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, the business side of it. But what, and I taught a class and lectured in Bradenton, Florida, Monday and Tuesday of this week. And I told the ladies there, I'm not doing this to pay my electric bills. I do this because I enjoy it. I love sharing my enthusiasm. I love sharing my mistakes and successes. I like to encourage people. You know, it just tickles me when somebody says, oh, the light bulb just went on. Now I know it's okay for me to be creative. It's okay for me to do something different. It's okay for me to modify a pattern or to add beads to my, you know, wall hanging. I've taught people, we do travel and in our RV. And so I teach some specific techniques that are good for small spaces. I've got a son in LA and a son in DC. They both live in small apartments. There's a lot of people in smaller apartments and condos that don't think they have room for a full sewing studio and, you know, can only have their sewing machine on their dining room table, which is fine. So some of the techniques I teach are for, you know, those kind of smaller areas. And I literally have had students jumping up and down that they were so excited that they now can do something on their own, you know. And so that just thrills me. I just get very excited. The class I taught on Tuesday, we were doing the three-dimensional floral flower class. And the one lady came in and she said, you so inspired me at the lecture last night. She says, I know it's okay for me to do something different. And so she looked at me and said, I'm not going to do the flower patterns that you suggested. I'm going to do my own thing. And I said, good for you. I said, I called her my A student or something. And she goes, no, I'm not the A student. She goes, I'm just the student willing to take the risk. And I said, I love it. So she did not piece her background. She laid it out raw edge. She was going to do three layers on her flower and only the top layer was going to be three dimensional. And I thought, this is cool. But just the fact that she said, I feel like I have permission now to do this, you know, just, you know, makes me happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the thing with any of these hobbies, I mean, needlework, quilting, whatever, is it can be intimidating to people. I mean, just recently my wife had some ladies from church over for a lunch and they wanted to come up to my room and look at my needlework. And, you know, it's just a room full of everything. And one of them said, oh my, I could never do all this. She said, I just used to do a kit of cross stitch. And well, you know, excuse the mess here, but it happens over time. But what stuck with me from that was this kind of a turnoff, like, oh, I could, you know, that's way too much for me, when really quilting, needlework, you just need a needle and a piece of thread and a piece of cloth and you can do something. And, you know, just there's that kind of a thing that sits in my head that we have to be careful that we don't scare people off because they feel like they need a $5,000 baby lock or whatever to be able to do a quilt when you don't.
Right. So I talk about in my lectures too about the advantage of challenges and or starting small, I guess I should say. Doesn't, you know, if it's your own challenge or if you do an organized challenge, but the advantages to me of a challenge, and I think this also appeals to a lot of other people, is it's a relatively small size, 20 by 20 inches. Some of the magazines do some as small as 5 by 7 inches. I said, who doesn't have time for a 5 by 7 inch quilt? I mean, my goodness gracious, that's, you know, you can do that. The other is, because of the small size, you have a limited amount of time and money invested into a small project. And then, you know, fourth, you get to play with something different, either the different fabrics that they're requiring or the theme. And so, you know, you may not have the courage to try this on, you know, your first grandbaby's quilt or your only daughter's heirloom wedding quilt. But maybe after trying it on a smaller challenge project, you'll have the confidence to try it in a larger project. And in class, even the other day, you know, I, you know, your point about people thinking, you know, you don't want to turn them off. You know, they'll say, well, what do I need to do? And, you know, I try to turn it around and say, what would you like to do? Well, I was thinking about using this thread, but I think you're going to tell me I need to use that one. And I'm like, no, you know, you can use a matching, you can use contrasting, you can use a variegated thread. What do you want to do? What would make your project, what would make it happy for you in your project? So then sometimes it's like, oh, this is too many decisions. Now I can't decide. You know?
Right.
You know, so like, okay, we only have so much time, so we do have to kind of keep moving. But you can do what you want. And, or they'll say, is it okay if I I add two leaves instead of, you know, three or something? Absolutely. You can do that.
And I think needlework is the same way. Any kind of needleworker that you get this, well, you know, I got to use this fabric or I've got to use this special thread. No, you can use whatever you want, whatever color you want, you know, change it up, make it yours. And I think sometimes we get stuck in a rut. Well, with mine's got to look exactly like what the pattern says or exactly like what the teacher says. And
right.
We got to get out of that. It's like, you know, let's push the limits a little bit. What can I add to make this more my own?
I agree with you, Beth. One gal, Tuesday brought in this big, it was a giveaway thing on a table at the end of the quilt meeting, a big box of beads, and it was all separated, you know, into the different little sections. And she said, well, I think, you know, it's going to be a purple flower. Maybe I should use blue. And so, well, you know, I had everybody come over and we laid out the beads in the different colors. Okay. What would it look like if she added jello? What would it look like if she put purple on there? You know, and what if it was a combo of green and orange? And everybody was like, ooh, you know, every time we tried a different color, it was, ah, ooh. So, you know, it's like, and then of course, you know, they had the elongated beads and then the short beads. And she's like, well, I guess I have to use all the round ones. No, throw them all on there. It'll be fine.
Right.
So I think they had fun with it. So if some of them again said, well, I wasn't planning on embellishing it with any beads or anything, but now I've got all these great ideas. I'm like, go for it. Go home and add the beads on later. It's okay.
Yeah. All right. We got to talk about your book, but I'm curious about the actual quilting part where you make the top and then you got to put the pieces together and then you have it quilted or you quilt it yourself. How do you view that as part of the overall art package? Is that something that's significant to you or do you just have some pattern that seems to make sense?
It is significant to me. Kind of going back to my grandma and, you know, her women of her generation and prior, you know, they were able to create art out of almost nothing, you know, just basic scraps. So I think of it as like three different layers of art. First is picking the colors and, you know, the values and the shades and all those things that related to the color. The second is putting the top together, or either piecing it or, you know, whatever your technique is. And then the third is the quilting part. And the quilting can complement the quilt, the design, it can match the design, or it can be a separate story in itself, quilted on there. And they're all perfectly fine. They're all perfectly acceptable. It's just what story do you want to tell? Sometimes I have something that's complementary in mind, and other times it's a little bit different. Sometimes I have the ideas right from the very beginning, and other times a quilt top will have to sit for quite some time until I figure out how I want to quilt it. I have one, it was a Judy Niedermeyer pattern, and I took the class with another friend, Jane, and I finished the top. I quilted around, it was called Vintage Compass, and I quilted around the Vintage Compass and the points in the center, And now I have this big kind of white open area until I get to the border. And I'm not sure what I want to do there. And it's been, I call it seasoning.
Yeah.
It's rusting, it's seasoning. While I try to decide what's worthy to do in that big open area. So sometimes it sits for a while, and other times it kind of comes together a little faster. I did one quilt last winter. It was leftovers, scrappy stuff. Again, I didn't care that the corners, you know, didn't all match. And I turned it into like a north, south, east, west kind of orientation, just the dark blues. So you really had kind of a compass orientation there. But it was all like wonky half square triangles. So completely opposite of squares, I did a spiral circle, very modern, walking foot kind of spiral, continuous spiral in the whole quilt. So that's an opposite. I mean, you've got circular stitching on this kind of traditional, you know, half square triangle quilt.
Yeah.
But it was different. I think a lot about the quilting, and I always do it myself, but sometimes I get a little rushed and kind of revert to my go-to motifs. I'm very comfortable doing feathers and just free motion stuff. And I just heard somebody talk about feathers and said, it was a judge at a show. And she says, feathers they're just old fashioned. And I'm like, they don't have to be. I mean, again, you know, right. you add vines in with them. You can add beads around them. I'm like, they do not have to look old fashioned. And I thought, I hate for a judge to say something like that, because also I feel it's discouraging people from, oh, well, that's all I know how to do. Or no, I guess I can never do that, you know,
yeah.
But, yeah. So does that kind of answer your question about the?
Yeah. I just wondered. Yeah. So it's as much a part of the art as the top.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think long armors do they can do some fabulous quilting. I cannot quilt as tiny with my domestic as they can with their long arm. But I think sometimes when, you know, you just push a button and walk away from it, that's a different type of quilting. And I'm glad that in a lot of shows, they are distinguishing long arm quilting from domestic quilting because it's just different. You can't achieve the same things. They do fabulous work, but if it's a template thing, that's just all the same pattern. And, you know, again, it's okay if you're doing a baby quilt that, you know, baby's going to spit up on and it's going to be washed a million times.
Right. Right.
Then just get her done. You know, it's not going to have the heirloom quilting on it, but.
All right. The book. Artful Insights in Fabric. So you always wanted to write a book and you finally got a chance?
Yes. And I don't know why I wanted to always write a book. I don't know why now. I must have had a good reason.
And the question for that is, now that you've done it, do you ever want to do another one?
Actually, yes. I already have two in mind.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a learning process just like anything else. So I've learned a few things that I'll do differently and better in the future. So my sister is one person, but other friends have said, you need to document, you know, stories. My Challenges Quilt lecture is a lot about the stories of my successes and failures and all the laughs my husband and I have had about, you know, things gone wrong, hand-dyed fabric that, you know, disintegrates because I did something wrong, you know. And I've had people come up to me at the lectures and say, oh, I'm so glad you told us about your mistakes. And, you know, afterwards I thought, do I really make that many mistakes? Oh my gosh. And they're like, no, it helps us. You know, it's like you're human and you're willing to talk about them and laugh about them. So it's surely okay for us to make some mistakes too. So I thought, all right, it is important, I think, even for just me to document the history of my quilts and some of the stories. And there are humorous stories, and there's some more heartfelt thoughts about, you know, like the quilt I did kind of in memory of my dad and of my pets. And, you know, even the suffrage one that I did for the 100-year anniversary of the 19th Amendment, my aunt, who's 90 years old, and she's the last of my father's siblings, you know, she was talking about my grandmother, you know, an Italian immigrant, that she spoke three different languages, and it was very, very important to her to become a citizen. And she was very proud to have the opportunity to vote. And she wasn't very educated, but she read the paper from, you know, beginning to end. So she was knowledgeable about what was going on in the world, what was going on in politics. And I thought that was, you know, a nice little heartwarming thought. And I thought, you know, again, that's going to be lost in our family, you know, too, if we don't, you know, document it and talk about it. So the book is it's stories about my quilts, and I've got them kind of categorized in some different ways. But, you know, it's, you know, quilted, you know, artful insight in fabrics. And so all those crazy thoughts that you have as you're sitting in your sewing room, or Beth, you know, you're sitting there with your needle and thread and these crazy thoughts that go through your head, and plans that you make, you know, big grandiose ideas, and they don't come to fruition for, you know, whatever reason. And then, you know, the bits of wit and wisdom. And my husband and I did all the narrative and, you know, all the pictures for the book, and he learned about Adobe InDesign, and he kind of married them together in the software program. And we get to the end, and he's like, I just don't know about this title. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I don't know. Is it even funny? Is there anything in there that's... And then I'm like, well, remember this story and remember that story. He's like, oh yes. Okay. He says, I guess we've just been looking at it so closely that he forgot these things. So, that's kind of what the book is about, is those stories. And you know, some of the design thoughts and decisions, that I made in making the quilts, and who inspired me. And I've had several people. I had one friend last night. She bought a book for me before I left for Georgia, and she texted me to say, I'm on page 25. She goes, and I can't put the book down, and it's really helping me. She goes, you always, when you go to a show, you look at these quilts and you think, I wonder what their inspiration was, or, you know, like the artist statement doesn't tell them enough information, you know? Yeah. So, you know, my friend Bonnie said, she goes, this just helps me. Like, I have an insight right into your brain and into the quilt about what you were thinking. And I thought, oh man, that can be kind of scary.
That's great. So then it's not a, here are 15 projects you can do. It's
no.
Not that at all.
No. And that's why, you know, it's, I think, a wonderful book for quilters, for people who admire fiber art, anybody who's had a quilt in their family or knew somebody who quilted, or just enjoys pretty pictures.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of fun things, I think, about the book.
Man, now I want to read it. Every show costs me money, you know.
I know. Every time, aren't it? It's bad.
Yeah. All right, we got to wrap up. But now, coming up at the end of April, I got to go to the Quilt Museum in Paducah, Kentucky. And wow, even if you're just passing through and have an hour, that is one stunning building full of really great art. But now you're at Quilt Week, April 26th to 29. Are you lecturing? What are you doing there?
I am teaching. So that's the American Quilt Society's show in Paducah. I will be teaching three classes, and I know two of them are sold out. I'm not sure. I haven't looked online about the third one, but that'll be my first AQS show. I have been to several shows. Paducah, you know, is kind of long been a quilter's haven location. And it's been even though I've been to the museum several times, it's been a bucket list to get a goal to get to the show there. So
yeah.
Bonus for me, I said, it's quite an honor for me to be teaching there. So I'm excited about that.
Quilt Week. That's gotta be just a town packed full of quilting enthusiasts, I would think.
Absolutely. And people have said before, oh, the show has outgrown the location, but nobody wants to move it because it's kind of the thing. But you're right. I mean, people book their hotel rooms almost a year in advance.
Oh.
I'm excited. It'd be like spring break week for college kids, I think.
Only quilters. Crazier.
Yeah,
even
yeah.
Crazier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, before we fully wrap up, though, too, I just share some final thoughts as well. If it's
yeah, sure.
Just I want to encourage everybody to, you know, to do what makes their heart sing. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of fiber art you do, if it's, you know, needlework, beading, you know, fabric, it doesn't matter. We all can benefit from trying something new, getting out of our box. It doesn't necessarily mean take a class, but, you know, that's always a good option. But challenging ourselves to do something different and expand our art. And my husband reminded me, too, it's not just expanding your art, it's expanding your life skills. I spoke at a lecture at an RV rally 3 years ago, and one of the ladies asked, do you drive the RV? And I said, oh, no, that's too scary. And she says, I challenge you to learn to drive. And the next time I see you, I want to know that you're driving the RV. So, you know, that was a different aspect of my life. And I said, yeah, you know, that's true. So I took a driving lesson. It was a weekend thing. And I learned to drive the RV. And now I can help drive. But it's just a wonderful way to expand, you know, your life in general, is with the, you know, fiber arts. And you know what, we never even got a chance to talk about, you know, the benefits of slow stitching. Oh my goodness gracious. You'll have to have me back and talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We will. Well, yeah. And I wanted to ask about that. We just ran out of time. So, all right, you got to come back then. Cause I want to learn about that slow stitching and yes. There's so many things. Yeah. We got about half of what's on the list here. Yep. So it happens. All right, Diane, yep. Thanks so much. Really enjoyed it. Appreciate the time and really enjoy your art. It's terrific. Thanks for sharing.
Gary and Beth, thank you both for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, and thanks to everyone for listening.